Good morning. We're going to call the tax committee to order. Welcome. And members, we are going to hear a bill from Representative Broad today. Then what we want to do is have Dr. Wilson join us after Representative Broad's bill. A number of members have asked for different pieces of information that Dr. Wilson has provided to the tax committee, and we want to give the committee the opportunity to ask Dr. Wilson questions and think through how we actually do forecasting within the Department of Revenue and penalties and some of the other items that have been raised. So with that, if Representative Broad is ready, Representative Broad moves House File 251.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you very much. I see I bring a large crowd to the table here, but I wish more people were here, but I'm sure that they'll hear about the bill along the way, Madam Chair, and thank you, by the way, for being a co-author on this bill. I think it's very important as we talk about taxes. You know, we sat down here and listened to wonderful overviews about our Minnesota tax system from Joel Michael and his crew in-house research and fiscal staff as well. And there's been there's a large number of tax bills being put forward. We heard some bills from Representative De La Forest, Representative Hillstrom, and Representative Erickson yesterday that I think had all of us saying, why the heck do we do this? Nobody in their right mind would do this. You know, where have we come from and where are we trying to go? And oftentimes we deal with these issues in a very politically charged and sometimes tight time frame type issues and get things done for the purposes of expediency. And so, Madam Chair and members, what I'm trying to do with this legislation is to take us outside that realm a little bit and to really look at our entire tax structure in the state of Minnesota, what it should be, what it could be, and to have outside experts help us in that direction to find consensus and identify challenges and opportunities within the system. So we really do need to have a broader, more policy-based discussion. And in order to begin that process of formulating, I think, a responsible plan for moving forward, but also a widely supported plan, I've decided to introduce this legislation called the Tax Reform Action Commission to take a very fundamental look at Minnesota's tax structure and purposes of taxation. So specifically, Madam Chair and members, the legislation will create a bipartisan environment to study problems and consider alternatives for our tax structure. The commission will include members of our legislature, but also outside experts, as I mentioned. The commission will culminate in an action. You know, we often hear about blue ribbon, red ribbon commissions, whatever those commissions are, that never really come back to the legislature with an action. And so this legislation is intended to culminate in some type of action, such as a legislative bill or, excuse me, the introduction of some legislation embodying what the commission has come up with. And then lastly, the legislation, I think this is important, is not focusing on tax cuts. It's not focusing on tax increases. It's intended to be revenue neutral. But what the true focus is how do we fundamentally reform our system in a way that is revenue neutral. So I think we need to have a bigger policy discussion before we get tied into who are we raising, what are we lowering, things along those lines. And Madam Chair and members, I'm a member of the 2020 Caucus. Now we're called the 2020 Conference, but really looking and trying to shine a light on the issues of Minnesota's future. And if you look at the demographic changes that are on our horizon, but also on horizons of all other states, our entire country, I think it's important to know and important to look at our systems that we have in place today and say, how are these going to hold up? With this, I think I've heard Representative Atkins call it the silver tide that's coming. How are our systems going to be able to handle these demographic changes as we go forward? So the proposal that I have here before you is not a silver bullet. But it's been a long time since the state has had a comprehensive view of the tax structure. I think the last comprehensive look was the Latimer study or Latimer Commission in the early 80s. And Madam Chair, maybe Joel Michael has more information about that if the members would like that. Previous to that, there was another study in the 50s. So we've had some strong gaps in time. And Madam Chair and members, I think the time is now. To take a look at our entire structure in a way that makes sense, in a way that is not politically in charge, and in a way that leverages the significant assets and experts that we have out in our communities. So let me just walk through the bill real quickly, and then there is a testifier, Madam Chair, or two. Section 1 is essentially just discussing some findings regarding our tax system and its ability to change with the nature of our economy and the demographics. Again, you know, we heard what are the goals of a tax structure, and in this legislation we're talking about it being simple and transparent, fair and equitable, and neutral and efficient. And, of course, we're all going to have differences of opinion regarding what all those things mean. The commission is established in Section 2. It sets forth the membership of the commission, which is 15 members. It also sets forth the duties of the commission in what they're intended to look at and focus in on as they assess our tax structure. Subdivision 4 sets forth some per diem allowances. Subdivision 5 talks about staff requirements. And then, Madam Chair, there is a fiscal note. This does have an open appropriation, and I'm willing to work with you and staff to either identify the dollars better or identify some changes within the legislation in order to focus it in a little bit more, Madam Chair. And just so members are aware, the membership section, I assume that there will be some questions about that. That is absolutely identical to the bill that I put in the hopper 2 years ago. So I wanted to make sure that members knew that the numbers were the same when I was in the majority as when I'm in the minority. So there's been no changes there and no political motivation in that respect, Madam Chair. So with that, Madam Chair, if you'd allow Lynn Reed from the Minnesota Taxpayers Association to make a few comments.
Thank you. Mr. Reed, welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Reed. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Taxpayers Association, and I just want to express my appreciation for your hearing this bill today. So happy Valentine's Day. I had another prop, and I left it somewhere. Not sure where. I do have some handouts here. It's just basically as a short testimony, mostly that I've already written in our Legislative Spotlight publication. And as I wrote there, I'll quote from our second issue this session, it's very therapeutic to record the contents of this bill. The principles of tax policy it requires the commission to look at could have come right out of MTA's primer on sound tax policy. And the only reason I can say that is because they're standard policy principles among academics. We don't take any off-the-wall kinds of approach. And if you look on the back of this handout, I just copied the principles that the bill requires to be looked at. And there is, as Representative Bodd suggested, there's disagreement in how those are applied. There are tensions among the principles themselves that have to be worked through as part of the political process, but there is almost no disagreement on what the principles are. Their application does have some tension. But regarding this commission, if you just look at the demographic changes alone, you can see that we're going to need a tax change. And there are some specifics I've put down of how our revenue system is not ideal. Our sales tax base, just right off the top as it came to my head, is far too narrow, and it's focused on tangible products. And so much of the economy now has shifted to services. It used to be 60%, 40%, I believe, as far as products, tangible products and the production and purchase of those, and 40% services, and that ratio has switched to 40% products and 60% services. And as we look ahead, of course, older Americans tend to purchase more services than tangible products. Young families starting households buy more things to fill their households and for their children. And seniors tend to purchase more services. We don't tax services very much in Minnesota. We rely very heavily on the income tax. That declines, and Tom Gillespie and Tom Stinson, our state demographer and state economist, have put together a presentation regarding that, that as seniors, as we boomers hit retirement, incomes will fall. And to the extent we rely on the income tax, much of that income is not going to be taxable, or it's going to be at a lower rate. So there are problems demographically looking ahead. The Star Tribune had an article, I put the link there, about a story about the demographics as we look ahead. And in addition to the revenue problems with the demographics, we have spending problems, of course, as we've all heard regarding the elderly and care for the elderly with the medical costs and so forth. So you've got that double thing. And our tax system is not set up for that at all. We're still using a young boomer kind of tax model in that economy. Now, as Representative Bob mentioned, the last study was formed in 1984. It's still popularly known as the Latimer Tax Study Commission. That's the prop I had, volume one. I don't know where I left it. It's somewhere. I had it when I left. I don't know where it is. It's either in the car or back at my office. So,
Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Very disorganized today.
Yeah. You know,
I hope you got a Valentine's card into your wife.
I did. We lost a staff person to Paul Wilson.
Well, that explains a lot.
And so I'm doing a lot more than I did. I'm actually having to work this year. This is tough. But I did, no bias at all, I did some work for Latimer Tax Study Commission when I was with the Department of Revenue. So it doesn't actually seem that long ago, even though I said 23 years is a long time ago. It doesn't seem quite that long to me, but and it was outstanding work. There's no bias here. No, but actually I did talk to a professor from Wisconsin yesterday, and he said that is a seminal work. It's still quoted. It's still used in among tax researchers. Very well respected. Minnesota kind of sets the standards with tax study commissions. I still quote the 1930s report on the tax system, the 1950s report we have in our office that I still use. We did have a standing tax study commission, I believe, Joel, in the 70s for a while, that went over a few years. So Minnesota, this professor in Wisconsin was saying, they're rare, but Minnesota has had a history of very good commissions that have produced valuable work for the nation, not just for Minnesota. And there have been a lot of changes since the 1980s, demographically, economically. There's a lot more research done, this professor was saying to me, that we've learned a lot in the last 23 years, and another commission could be very helpful to bring that research in, because we know more now than we did, even though much of that work is still very useful. Now, I just want to make one note. I think even with a revenue change that fits the demographics, this is part of the research question, I think. It's not clear that a revenue system, a revenue neutral change that does tailor to the economy and the demographics would still provide enough for the spending pressures that we are looking at. But I don't think that necessarily means, therefore, raise the revenue. I think we also have to look at the spending side. So it'd be great to have a spending reform commission, too, is we have to do things better. I'm not sure just these changes alone will provide enough revenue as you look ahead. We did this 2030 study that I mentioned here that I had the link to in the late 90s. And it was, I forget the exact year, 97 or something, 98. We used current law at that time as a base. We made conservative assumptions on wage growth, client growth. We used projections that were available and just extended current law out. At the time we did the study, the medical assistance component, I think, was somewhere around 9% of the state budget, and carrying that out to 2030, it would be almost 18% with no changes. So It's the kind of thing that if we just keep doing the same thing, we're going to double that spending as a percent. Now, we have made some changes. We're looking at that alternatives. But this is the kind of thing. And our revenue system, as it is, with a narrow sales tax base, an unstable property tax system that has a lot of problems from year to year and big surprises, things like this, our income tax base, it's not set up for these spending challenges, and even with the changes, we're still going to have spending challenges. So I think we could be set another standard with a commission. We have a reputation for doing it well. I think we can set aside our political differences and approaches. Of course, there are going to be differences. We have to work through that. But with the research that's been done in the last 23 years and our reputation for taking the lead on these things, I think it would be a very good proposal to push through. And I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Representative Broad, do you want to go to your other testifier, and then we'll have Mr. Reed and you all answer questions? How would you like to proceed?
Sure, Madam Chair. That'd be just fine.
Okay.
We have Susan Diori with the Minnesota Association of Realtors wishes to testify as well.
Okay. Thank you. And there are a few questions here, members, but I thought we'll get to the testimony and then have at it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
For
the record, my name is Susan Diori, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. And although I know most of you have probably seen this little booklet, and in the essence of time, I don't want to repeat a lot of what has already been said, but certainly would echo the comments of support for this particular legislation. Our booklet that is being handed out to you essentially outlines the essence of the need for this particular piece of legislation to pass. And I'll speak a little bit selfishly in that I am in what I like to call the trough generation. After the baby boom generation, there's a nice big drop. And I come at the bottom of that little drop. And there's a good distance of time between just from in the gap between my generation, and the upcoming generation. And from the real estate perspective, we know that seniors will move less. We know that they will buy less. We know that Social Security is taxed just based on Social Security income tax. Taxation, we know that we're going to receive less in income tax as the population ages. And all of the charts that you can see here are what I'm speaking to. We have charts in here to reflect that. We know we have declining enrollment. And so we have, the state of Minnesota is going to have some substantive issues to address, not to mention the whole issue of internationalization. We have, for example, one bank alone. You've probably seen in the media that the bank of that's located in the United Kingdom, who's has mortgages worth about a little over $10 billion that they think are going to be foreclosed upon in the United States. So you can see there's outside factors as well, in addition to our demographics, in addition to how we're taxing. I think it's a critical point in time for somebody who hasn't been here during the Latimer studies that we have a new study to reflect what we're going to face in the future. And I would also like to stress the issue of spending as well. Again, from being in the trough generation, as I like to call it. We know that Health and Human Services spending is going to increase substantially with the senior services, which is the biggest portion of Health and Human Services spending. So we know that also has to be reflected in our studies as well as how we are taxing in Minnesota. So I appreciate you allowing me the time to testify today in support of this legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Representative Broad, I think one last piece that's instructive is, as you mentioned earlier, a little background and context from Mr. Michael as to kind of what studies have been out there. And members, I just want to tell you, I have been a strong supporter of Representative Broad's bill, and I think we are all aware that we have a lot of problems ahead of us. And I know I've mentioned in committee before that we're trying to form a business subcommittee on business taxation. And that's another piece we're hoping to announce next week that will get done. And again, members who are interested, some have talked to me about being on that subcommittee. Members who are interested should tell me. But I do think we've heard some discussion here from Mr. Reed and about the adequacy part of the tax code, as Ms. Diori said as well. And that's when you look at Representative Broad's bill, that'd be the fourth principle in the clear taxation is adequacy, and that's the spending piece. So you can see why Representative Broad doesn't have that in the bill, because she's looking at the taxing side. I should say, and I know I've talked to a few of you about this, and I mentioned it to Representative Broad, that I myself am working on a study bill as well, but this wouldn't be just in taxes. It would be both sides, and probably something that I'd have to work with Representative Carlson and Solberg on. But I think all of us know from, as you mentioned, Dr. Stinson, we have huge problems with sales tax base erosion, income tax receipts falling, and volatility, other things happening in the system. And I know that Representative Broad succeeded in getting this to the tax conference committee last time and didn't make it all the way. So I do want members to know that my intention is to try to get something together here that we can get to conference if it's the will of this body. And so any input you have on this particular bill and its structure and how people are appointed and who should be on it and those kind of duties, I think we should try to work through some changes here that could be supported by this committee, because I think it is incumbent on this committee to face the facts of what's happening to the Minnesota tax code. So we have a number of questions. We'll get to that. But if we could just have Mr. Michael give us a little context on these studies. I do know Commissioner Ingeson, the head of finance, I met with her the day before she left, and I didn't know she was leaving the next day, and she did a very good job of not letting on. But I asked her, if you could do anything, what would you do? And interestingly, she said, time to bring back a tax commission. I think the academic community understands that there's a lot out there that we have not really taken a very serious look at. So with that, Mr. Michael, if you could give us a little history. We've heard a lot about the Latimer study, and some members were here during that time, but a little background, if you would.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just to, very quickly run through it, I think as the testifiers indicated, Minnesota in the last 50 years has done two big tax studies, and both of them have great reputations. The one in the 50s, the executive director of it, I believe the chair of it, was Walter Heller, who was at the time the chair of the economics department at the University of Minnesota. And of course, many of you know he went on to become the chair of the Council of Economic Advisors under President Kennedy and was, regarded as a national expert. The Latimer Tax Study Commission also has, as Mr. Reed indicated, was done in the 84 to 86 time frame. I did bring my props along. The report was published in 86, and as Mr. Reed indicated, it does have a tremendous professional reputation, and in part the reason for that is because of the people that they used in preparing the study. Literally, two things happened. One was they got a number of people sort of that were early in their careers who've gone on to be sort of some of the stars in the public finance economics profession. Therese McGuire, who had finished her PhD at the university, was one of the staff persons, and she's gone on to, have a sterling professional reputation. She's the editor of the National Tax Journal now and a professor at the University of Illinois. But some of the other people that did the work, just if I quickly run through them, people like Joel Slemrod, John Mikesell, who's sort of recognized still to this day as sort of the best national expert on sales tax, Bill Fox, Roger Gordon, Bob Eagle was the director. He has a great reputation, too. And so I think a lot of the reasons why that study is so well-received, well, there are two reasons. Two is that the leadership of it, the members of the commission were adept at sort of reaching consensus on the report, but also the underlying research that was done by these, economist types was also very good. And so that's sort of what underlay the quality of that work. And if you want to sort of duplicate that, you'd want to try to achieve some of the same dynamics of having both good political leadership on the commission and then having very solid research by people who would be well regarded nationally to provide support for those people on the commission. Chair also asked me to sort of run through, it's not like research on tax issues has sort of stopped in Minnesota since the Latimer Tax Study Commission, and I thought it might be useful just to run through some of the efforts that have been done since then. The thing that distinguishes the 50s and the 80 report is that they were comprehensive looks at the overall tax system, whereas the efforts that have been undertaken since then have focused on very specific or narrow type issues. So there was a sales tax committee on capital equipment. There was a sales tax advisory commission. Both of those were in the 1990s. Some of you probably will remember that Governor Ventura had a citizens jury on the property tax and then went on to do a sort of a fairly big effort of gathering sort of public information and doing study using Department of Revenue and other state agency staff on his big plan, and that involved, hearings across the state and a lot of staff work. And finally, there was also a business tax study that was commissioned by the legislature in the 90s and was just recently completed by a consultant at the University of Minnesota through the Department of Revenue. So there have been a number of studies on parts of the sales tax or all of the sales tax and the property tax and business taxation. What distinguishes Representative Broad's bill is that this would be a sort of a comprehensive look at the overall tax system and not just on, selected parts of it.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. And members, if Representative Broad's ready, we'll go to questions then.
I just also wanted to make one note. I have it ahead of my file, a February 2005 report that Growth and Justice actually came and gave the tax committee as well. And one of the keys to this is reform. It's rethinking our Minnesota taxes. So it doesn't matter what end of the political spectrum you're on. Everybody is kind of coming together on the common ground of you got to look at the reform piece. You're going to have differences of opinion on what you want to see. But everybody, I think, is coming to the place of let's look at take a comprehensive look at reform. How does this fit going forward?
Yes. Thank you. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Reed, I've got two questions. One is pretty technical, but the first one is I noticed you have equal treatment of equals, and most, in general, overall businesses seem to be, I would think, equals. Yet we tax commercial property tax at a much higher actual rate when you compare it to other states than the industrial. And I think Dr. Wilson is probably one of the top experts on that. But what do you think of that? And then the second one is it sounded to me like you're saying we should increase the percentage of the tax that seniors pay, and I was wondering if Representative Broad supported that.
Representative Mullery, I just copied these from the bill, so those aren't ours. These principles are from the bill, so I just copied those. But the equal treatment of equals, if in referring to our 50-state property tax comparison study, which shows that difference in commercial and industrial, the main reason that happens in our study and in actual incidences is that the percentage of personal property on industrial is much higher than on commercial property, and we exempt personal property. So compared to states that do tax personal property, industrial does much better in the national rankings, even though within Minnesota they're taxed identically, only real property.
Right.
But compared to other states, that's why they show up differently. And as far as taxing seniors more, I guess as a boomer, we tend to look at, you know, it used to be 55 the free cup of coffee, now it's 60. You know, so I'm never going to get there to the free cup, but really, you know, Country Buffet, they raised it to 60, right when I was in line, I think. But, you know, but and I'm not quite 60, so but it, based on income, that's the ability to pay argument. I don't think when somebody hits 65, all of a sudden they should get a break. Period. It should be equals to equals, and of course, ability to pay is a key issue in terms of the politics of it, not so much the economics or anything else, but just in a sense of fairness, the ability to pay has to be in there. But I think that alone, rather than age, should be the measure.
Thank you. Representative Broad, did you want to answer the rest of Representative
Madam Chair, if Mr. Reed is looking for a free cup of coffee, I would advise him not to run for the legislature.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Representative Broad, I'm appreciative of you bringing this forward. It is an area we really need to look at, and sooner rather than later. And I have a couple questions for Mr. Michael. When you were talking about the 50s study and the 80s study, of those recommendations that came out of there, I don't know if there were recommendations, I haven't read that, but how many were adopted by the legislature? What actually happened? But, I mean, did the legislature incorporate some of those views that came out of there?
And Chair, Representative Marquardt, I haven't ever gone through and done a scorecard, but I think the answer, yes, there were recommendations, and many of the recommendations have been sort of adopted slowly, you know, elements of them over the years. Some of them, one of the biggest effects of it, I think, the report came out in 85, and there were substantial income tax increases substantial income tax changes that were enacted in both the 85 and the 87 session. And I think that you could argue pretty well that the seeds for those changes really lay in the recommendations of the Tax Study Commission. And part of it, of course, the dynamic was that the federal government, you know, also enacted a major tax reform in that same window of time. But the economist that did the study on the individual income tax sort of joked about the 85 changes because they sort of went halfway to what the recommendations were. And in some ways, because they only went halfway, they were worse than what. But all of that got corrected in the 87 changes. And I think the property tax changes that were enacted throughout the 90s, culminating in the 2001 changes, had many of the seeds for those changes were actually lay in some of the recommendations that were in the Latimer report, and on the minor taxes, that's also true.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just wondering also, Representative Broad, on the 2009 date of when the report has to come back, and maybe this also is for Mr. Michael. I mean, I'd like to see that come back like April 1st of next year, kind of in an off budget year where you could actually start putting this out into the public arena and you could start talking about it in tax committee without the pressure of having to put out a budget and everything like that. I think would set the groundwork a lot better for then the 2009 session. I'm just wondering, in you know, if you started July and you went to like April of next year, that'd be what, 8-9 months, and I don't know if Mr. Michael knows how long the previous, the Latimer study went and so forth, but is there a reason or could we shorten that a little bit?
Representative Broad.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I believe the Latimer study was roughly a two-year event, It may have lingered a little bit on either side of that. But, you know, the only concern I would have is that if you would, in that time frame, that short time frame, would be rushing through the process. That's exactly what I don't want to occur. I would prefer, if you're concerned about the time frame, which I understand, that we actually lengthen it out, to do a truly comprehensive and fair analysis and review of what's going on. I think you need a little bit more than 8 or 9 months. That's just my initial thought, and I'm willing to work on that time frame. My goal is to make it to be as usable as possible. And as usable in the way that one of the different spins of this commission is that it actually has a piece of legislation that will come out of it from which we can respond, from which we can, the body can respond and the body can act. And that's kind of the little different spin, again, that this commission is doing. I truly want to see action. I don't just want to see another study, another commission out there. I think the Latimer approach had, as Joel said, you know, being from a rural area, you know, you put the seed in the ground, you sow the seed, and you hope it grows. And I think that there's a lot of growth that has come from that study and from the previous study. So I would have a little concern over that 8-month time frame.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And just one more point to this, and maybe it's something we can look at later. I just, you know, the release here is July 1st of 2009, and, you know, legislature may still be in action at that time. I don't know. But I would rather see that released while the legislature was in session, so you could start bringing it and members could percolate this. And because it comes out in July 1st, which is when we're out of session, it kind of goes into a vacuum of some sort, and I can see just where you would get a lot of information out potentially that could be used a lot of different ways, whereas if it came kind of through a committee, you could have testifiers and they could present it, and it's in front of, and it's more condensed, and I think it would be more effective. You know, there's one thing we want to avoid on all this is creating SWOTs, and those are strategic plans languishing on the shelf. And that's why I asked the question is, you know, you want to make sure it's going to work, and I do think if it comes out during a session and you can go into a committee, I mean, we don't have to change anything today, but I think if this makes the final cut, I think we really need to look at the kind of the due date. And I think whether or not it's 9 months or 24, if it's 9 months, they're going to work a lot more concise. And, I mean, I still think that's a long period of time to do the work.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I am more than happy to work with you on finding something that makes sense in terms of the time frame. And, Madam Chair, I'm very anti-SWOT.
Representative Rugavina.
Well, Madam Chair, members, you know, I hate to rain on this touchy-feely committee here, but, you know, I've been around, you know, my 21st year, and I've seen income tax cuts that a lot of the people getting up and testify said weren't going to hurt this state, the economy. Then I've seen sales tax shifts, including the one last year that MVEST, that the growth in the economy was going to pay for it. I've seen school district takeovers that were supposed to be being claimed as school spending when it was nothing more than property tax payments to people that could afford to pay. Business taxes shifted, and probably the realtors had a lot to do with that, that shifted onto other homeowners' taxes. $1 billion a year, depending on which figure you want to use, of fees in the last couple of years. All extremely regressive to the common and ordinary person. Now we're going to form a committee that's going to have, it says, 3 members appointed by the governor, 2 from the executive bench, 1 from real life, I'll call it. 4 members appointed by the majority leader, 2 from real life, you know. Then we get down to who they're going to be. They're going to be members who are of recognized standing and distinction and who possess demonstrated capacity to discharge the duties. They have special experience and knowledge in taxation, economics, and accounting. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have Tony that called me yesterday and has epilepsy and had to quit his job at MDOT, and he pays $1,300 a month for his insurance because his daughter has problems too. And he cried to me yesterday. I got to make a decision to be between eating now and buying drugs. Is he going to be on this commission? You know, he can teach this whole damn committee and people in the audience a lot. You know, we got a lot of work to do here. We got an economy that is everybody's BSing about. Nobody's addressed the counting inflation on the inside, on the income side, but not counting it on the spending side. Representative Broad herself stood up on the House floor and said we have over a $2 billion surplus. By Easter, you'll have it up to $5 billion. You know? Because I heard the governor say $3 billion in his speech. And people are starting to believe this BS. You know, instead of this touchy-feely stuff, let's go back and look at paying for all of these things we did here. And the bottom line is the people that paid the most are those billion-dollar in fees, and there are people. You know, the common ordinary people that drive trucks and teach school and nurse our elderly and everything else, are they going to be on this commission? No. You know, it's our duty to raise money and spend it. And we haven't been doing a very good job of that recently because we used to have a progressive tax system in this state that keeps getting a little more and a little more and a little more regressive. And the experts that you're going to have on this committee are the same experts, whether it's the realtors or the taxpayers, that told us growth of the economy is going to pay for that school district takeover when we bought Minnetonka and Edina's and everybody's property taxes. They're the same experts that told us MVEST was going to be paid for. And now the sales tax, Mr. Michaels, you could tell me if I'm wrong, on cars are going down in the forecast. You know, I'll tell you what, Madam Chair, I think we got a lot more important things to do in our tax bill than worry about putting something like this in there. That's just my humble opinion. But if we're going to do this stuff, why don't we put some real people on here that can tell everybody on this committee, like Tony that called me yesterday, a former MDOT employee, paying $1,300 a month of his disability pension just for the state health insurance that he's got to keep because of the situation in his family. Put Tony on this committee. I'll bet you his opinion is going to be a lot different than yours and yours. And that's all I got to say.
Representative Broad and Representative Rukavina, if you want to address the subdivision two of membership, I think Representative Rukavina's point is really well taken about who this committee thinks should be on a commission. You know, I was fortunate enough in graduate school that I actually took a class from Dr. Heller, who was JFK's chief economic advisor, and we were fortunate to have him be a graduate professor in the state of Minnesota for a while, and there are incredible people to be brought to the table to do very good progressive things for people, and I agree with you on that. I would not support a commission, and I hope this committee would not support a commission that would be not wanting to hear from the real people. I agree with you. I do think part of, and I'll tell you honestly, I think Representative Broad will acknowledge that part of the holdup in the tax conference committee last time was in the membership component of the bill. And so I do think members should think about how to address some of the issues Representative Rukavina have addressed. I think we heard Mr. Michael talk about some of the folks who've been on previous commissions, and I think we need some pretty academically heavy folks here. And I've not interpreted this bill to be organizations that testify before this committee, and that certainly wouldn't be something I support on any part of the spectrum. So this is exactly the place to raise these issues, because we do want to hear from members. If this is going to be part of this tax bill, how's it going to work for everybody, to get at the question of the things we all know, that Dr. Simpson is telling us, that we see the sales tax eroding, that we're not taxing services, that the income tax is scheduled to go down, that when capital gains realizations take place due to the tax reform in Congress, what's going to happen there? There's so much out there. So I hear you, and I hear the passion, and I don't have the answer, but I think people should take this as a serious charge to think about, what would you do different here? I have to say, I think it's pretty heavy politically, as far as the governor gets this, the Senate gets this, the House gets that. And I'm more on the academic angle, the Walter Heller angle, and Representative Broad has this format, but she's the author, so she can talk about what she's willing to to, you know, move around in here, because I think you raised the right points, Representative Rukavina, that if it's an exercise to create pain for Minnesota and Minnesotans, I don't think anyone's interested. Representative Rukavina.
I'm sure my main point being, if we're going to have this, let's have some real people on here whose lives get affected by what we do who can tell us. But my point also being that I think it's our job and not a commission's job. And on that note, Madam Chair, and Representative Bott, happy Valentine's Day. I didn't mean to, you know.
To that point. Representative Denver, to that point. Representative Bott.
Madam Chair and Representative Rufinas, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, the intent is really to strike that balance, because I think the issues that you bring up are great. You know, we all learn a lot from all of our constituents, whether it's Tony or whether it's, I just got an email from a woman named Stephanie. So, I mean, we learn a lot from our constituents, and that obviously has to be in play as we figure out and as we try to look at our entire tax structure, you know, how it hits the ground, how it hits Tony, how it hits the owner of a small business, how it hits all those different places. And I think that's why a comprehensive look at something is so important. Because we often look at these little tax issues in a vacuum. We look at them, how they affect, you know, capital equipment reimbursements, how we do, you know, income taxes, property taxes. We look at them as separate entities when what they really are is connected in so many ways, and they cannot be disconnected. So the intent is to bring all that stuff together and blend it. And in regards to the membership, Madam Chair, I'm more than happy to work on the membership. This is my first shot at trying to balance private individuals, making sure that we're bringing in experts from the community, bringing in community members to also play a part with the legislative body to come out with something. If we just have private members and we're going to bring forward legislation from this commission, I think you have a disconnect there too. So I'm really trying to strike a balance. I'm more than happy to work on the membership piece, and I'll take any suggestions that Representative Rukavina and others have to offer. But what I would say, Madam Chair, is I really want to strike a balance between private and legislative so that we can get something done.
Thank you. And we're going to go to Representative Demmer to that point, and then we've got Earhart, Carlson, Solberg, Mullery, Wolfslager. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, just to that point, you know, this business of real people versus legislators, I would beg to say that we have some real people in the legislature, Representative Rubelina. There are many of us that have not spent 20-some-odd years legislating. We've been out providing jobs for people. We've been working. We've got teachers who have been teaching for 30 years, and now they're here for the first time. We have a lot of business people who have been running businesses, and now are here because they can in their states after putting in 20, 30 years of building and running businesses. Working with real people on a day-by-day basis, our employees, the people we live with. There are many legislative heroes, Representative Rukavina, who have either friends and or family members that maybe are disabled and have those issues. They really do understand those things. And I guess I step back a bit when we say we have real people and not legislators, because Representative Rukavina, there are a lot of us here that are real people. And not everybody, you know, there are some that have been here a long, long time, and I'm not going to speculate as to whether those are real people or not. But I think we do bring a perspective, because we run for office because we are here to do good things for the state of Minnesota. I do agree with you that I think it's part of the legislature's responsibility to deal with these issues, but I think I get a little bit, my back stiffens up a little bit when we say we can't have legislators because we need real people. Well, by golly, we are real people, and we've lived life, and we've been out there doing things, and we're here, and we're representatives working because we want to make the state better based on what we've seen in real life. And I think we have to keep that perspective, and I just wanted to make that point, Madam Chair, and Representative Rukavina, thank you for your
prayer. Representative Rukavina.
Representative Denver, I didn't say you weren't a real person. You're a real character in my eyes. But anyway, you know, you should use your experience. That's exactly my point. You know, we've had all kinds of experts come down here in the last 6-8 years and tell us that we could do this and we could take this money and shift it here and we could take that money and cut those income taxes or whatever, and it was going to all be paid for. They were the experts that you're going to see pointed to this committee. I'm saying you and I are legislators. We got elected. It says in the Constitution what we're supposed to do. Use your real life experience. You ran an implement store. Use that experience. Your fathers came in and bought from you. Use that experience. You don't need a committee to do that. Use your real life experience. Let's get the job done. It's our responsibility. I don't need a professor that makes $300,000 a year telling me to shift taxes to a somebody that makes $40,000 because they got a choice on what they want to buy. I don't need that. I've got real life experience like you. And my experience might be a little different than yours. That's the great thing about this place. We all have a different experience. We got a lawyer, a grocer, a teacher, a farmer right here.
Well, there's too many lawyers. But that's who got three. Two lawyers.
Yeah, yeah.
More over here. Let's see. One, two, three, four, five. That's one of the problems, but that's a whole other issue.
Representative Earhart, are you a real person? You have the next question.
Madam Chair, I'm just going to suggest we take a vote on Representative over there to see if he's a real person in our minds. Anyway, Madam Chair, I was going to ask, there are some other studies, a lab study and so forth. Were those too compartmentalized to you for you to include in your...
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, yes, the lab study was, I didn't mention that. That was a study that the legislature paid for on a even narrower, just sort of the design of the local government aid formula, but yes. I mean, the thing that distinguishes, I think, all of those efforts from the Latimer Commission and the 50s era commission is that they're not a sort of a comprehensive look at the overall tax system.
Thank you.
Manager, Representative Broad mentioned that these tax issues are interrelated, and they certainly are. And lately, we've been trying to make the point that because the gas tax hasn't increased for 18 years, the local units of government are increasing their property taxes to pay for what otherwise should be paid for by the gas tax. They're putting a burden on the local taxpayers to pay for transportation needs. Not necessarily are they those that use the roads or other transportation means, but they are more readily available because they're sitting in their houses trying to make ends meet, and yet they're paying for roads that they may not use. I think one of the most important drivers, that aside, one of the most important drivers of tax policy is the next election, which we haven't mentioned.
Thank you for that, Representative Earhart. No one's taking the bait on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Holbert, to that point.
The next election. It never goes away. Right,
thank you. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, just a comment. I was reading over the fiscal note, and I see here where it says we assume the House Research Department and the Office of Defense Counsel Research will provide some of the staffing. And I would say that that's something to probably think very carefully about, because I can see where we would want to have them in the role of doing a critique on the report, and if they've been the ones that have actually drafted the report, that may be difficult for them to do a critique that we would like to have as a committee. The other thing is, whoever wrote the fiscal note says we assume, so I don't know if they have contact with the department to see what they're feeling like in terms of the ability to stand, because as we all know, the tax bill goes through, we generally have our own requests, if you will, for the interim and so on, that might be separate from a commission like this. So something to think about. I like the idea that they're independent, and right, they would be able to provide us with that independent information. Just a comment, the question was raised about the commission reports. If I'm thinking of the right one, and it's obviously one that I read about, not one that I was here for, the one from the 1950s during the Freeman years, I think a fair amount of that was adopted to set the stage. Acknowledging that the yes, quite frankly, it set the stage for some of the things that probably Representative Levine would like in terms of the future funding of education and so on, that later was built upon with Minnesota Maryland and so on. Anderson, but the Freeman, that's how they did set the stage for quite a major change in the way we funded services in ways that we haven't been able to do that. The Latimer Commission, I'd be pretty hard-pressed to think of much that was really in the end adopted, that I can recall. Other than if you're running for governor, you probably don't want to have your name attached to the report. You get a fair amount of name recognition, but you also pick up the liabilities, and maybe George Latimer could tell us a little bit about primary election and how some of the recommendations for the commission played in that election. Something that we may want to think about.
Representative Broad, are you running for governor?
Representative Lynchesty, I am really looking forward to getting this out of, I think the discussion that we're having here, whether it's Latimer running in some sense or whether Representative Earhart talking about the next election, I mean, that's really that's really driving the point home, that this commission is a necessity. You know, because we are in a political environment. We're never going to get out of a political environment. But sometimes it's good to set things aside, work on them on the side, in a public manner, may I say, and then bring it back to that political environment. And that's what this legislation hopes to do.
Did you have more representatives?
That was somewhat tongue-in-cheek when I was trying to.
Yes, and I apologize. I interrupted you.
It was a commission report. His name was simply attached to the chair of the commission. The serious part of my comments, though, is the role of Pulse Research in something like this, and recommending that we think very carefully about what their role would be.
And I think that is a very good point, Representative Broad, that Representative Solberg has raised, and we should have further discussion on that. I do want to get to more questions, and that is next to Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, I just want to follow up a little bit on that, and I noticed that the fiscal note is preliminary. But I would agree wholeheartedly with Representative Carlson on his actions or his concerns, and I also noticed that it said that the legislative staff cost would be absorbed, and I think if you request a better fiscal note, it would be extremely important as we go forward.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Representative Mallory.
Oh. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question of Joel, since I'm thinking about that Latimer report. It seems like that came out just before the language that we used, and now both sides of the aisle agree kind of was not very wise on the FOCs, and I was wondering if that was... Did that language come out of that report since it's right afterwards?
Mr. Michael, did the FOC change? Did it come out of the Latimer report?
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, no, I don't. It's been a long time since I've read the corporate income tax portions of the Latimer report, and I don't believe that it addressed and it certainly did not recommend the mechanism that was adopted. I think one of the big things that was adopted of the Latimer recommendations was the elimination of federal deductibility, which I think, you know, that was a huge issue in the middle 80s, and many of us sort of still remember the battles over that. But on corporate income, no, it was not.
I do think Representative Mueller is right, though. I think it's about 1986 that the change came, so the timing is interesting. Did you want something to that point, Mr. Reed? We have a number of questions.
Yes, Madam Chair, just on the staffing, as I was one of the staff, and the way that worked, as I recall in the Department of Revenue, we were just given the directions. We mechanically, I ran the income tax model mechanically. I didn't put into it any ideas. So I was told by the staff of the commission itself, could you do this run? And that's how that worked. And I'm not sure, I haven't read the language about that, but it doesn't have to be that the staff directs anything, but they're just responding to requests. So that's one way it worked for us.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Just on that point, at least as I would view that, it would be quite a bit different when we're talking about Department of Revenue and what their role would be, as opposed to the role of legislative staff that would be doing critiques. I would separate the difference more quite clearly.
Yes. And Representative Broad, one piece I would add to that is, members, you may be aware that frequently we ask House Research to critique a study done by someone. So I think Representative Carlson is raising a really legitimate point here. We'll ask them if the methods were actually legitimate, whether or not we can take what some private economist might have been hired to do and use it as something that's worthwhile when we analyze information, or whether our House research staff would say, you know, basically this is a flawed study. So I think Representative Carlson has a good point here. Representative Broad.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I was just going to say that as well. Representative Carlson, I really appreciate that point. I think it's a very good perspective for us to take going forward, and I did just notice Joel Michael wipe a lot of sweat off his forehead if we go that direction. So, Madam Chair, I'm more than willing to work on things along those lines in regards to staffing. I think that is some of the concern in regards to the preliminary nature of the fiscal note is how is that staffing going to occur, which pieces is what person going to play, how do you bring in the consultants, things along those lines, and we need to flesh that out a little bit more.
Thank you. Representative Wolfsmeyer.
Chair members, Representative Rupavina, happy Valentine's Day. you know, I'm not opposed to the study, but in your bill, Representative Broad, you know, the first sentence is the local tax system is flawed. And as a new member here, you know, I have a hard time with just the use of words that are, presumptuous. You know, it's hard for me to be a new member and come onto this tax committee and say everything that's been done before me is flawed. So I just have a hard time with some of the words in here. And if there was a way, Chair, in the same way that when you looked at the Department of Revenue technical report and you removed things that were considered controversial, if that's a way to move this forward, that's one thing. And then I'm still thinking about yesterday, Representative Ball, when you asked Mr. Owen about the business sales tax. And, you know, he actually came back with a much broader view of things that a lot of us appreciated, and you know, he talked about globalization and the need for VOTEC training and consumer choice. And so again, I mean, I know what you're trying to get at here, but just be careful what you're asking for. So, but I mean, this word flawed bothers me a lot.
And we're going to go to Representative Dabney to that point, but Representative Broad, and members know, and particularly members have been here for a while, that often these findings clauses and purpose clauses are discouraged because they sort of direct and make statements that really are not legislative in nature as far as changes. And so, Representative Broad, I think that's a, would you be willing to remove Section 1 as part of your bill, really? I mean, I think you're making an outline statement there to say here's a problem we need to correct, but it isn't necessary to the contents of the bill. Would you agree?
Madam Chair, I'm more than happy to work on that language or remove it if that's the way it needs to go. What I was trying to do is set up a, the pet tax policy, essentially, is trying to set up the system that will be put in place for this commission to operate under. So if that's something that I need to work on, that's great. If we need to remove it, fine. But I was trying to set up a policy statement that I think most would agree with in terms of those three tax policy statements. So I'm willing to work on that language as well.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This wasn't necessarily in reference to Representative Wolfshager's point, but you gave me the chance to speak, so I'll take it. I'll put it in the box. I guess I do appreciate Representative Broad's willingness to look at Section 1. I understand the point you're making, but I tend to find that legislative findings language simply clutter up statute, and I don't like them, even when I agree with the language in the finding. But I am interested in the language on page 3, the first couple of lines here. Let me, I folded it over. 3.1 and 3.2, where you talk about competitiveness, and I had the same experience yesterday that Representative Wolfsmeyer did. When you asked Mr. Owen about, you know, what do you need to be more competitive, he and the other business people who spoke in response, nobody brought up taxation. They brought up education. They brought up workforce. They brought up global trade agreements. They brought up health care. If you look at the Chamber of Commerce's recent surveys the last couple of years to their members, taxation has dropped well down the list. If you look at some of the economic development writings from academics, competitiveness now in a more digital economy is less about taxation and more about an adequately funded school system. It's about cultural institutions and opportunities that can draw and retain businesses and employees. It's about communities that are diverse and affirming, because that's where the creativity comes from, is when that diverse community bumps up against each other and sparks occur. How do you get to the issues of competitiveness beyond simply flogging the tax system as the sole point of competitiveness for the state? Because I share the concern.
Representative Bright.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, Mr. Owen was excellent, and he gave some very interesting responses. And again, you know, part of the reason I asked the question was to get an answer from somebody who's living that life. You know, what is it about manufacturing? And we got a phenomenal answer from him. But I think that there is a competitive piece to tax policy. I mean, whether it's single sales factor, we talk about that from a competitive standpoint, or whether it's retaliation tax in terms of insurance. So, I mean, there's some pieces of the puzzle. If I need to work on that language, I'm more than happy to do that. But I don't think you can disconnect fully our tax system from the competitive nature of business in the state of Minnesota. But I'm happy to work on the language to maybe make that work out better.
Thank you for that. Representative Colt. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm back on the issue of the timeline. Representative Broad, and I don't know if you might want to address this, but if we look at the summer of 2009, we got 8 members between the executive branch and the legislative branch that are on this. There will be a campaign season and an election in between. How do you see the chances of all 8 of those members surviving? let's be realistic. We got a 15-member committee, 8 of which are either the executive branch and or legislators. What are the chances of all 8 of those being able to serve continuously on this committee through an election season, get reelected, and finish through to the summer of 2009? Does that effectively shorten up the time frame and or politicize this and or short-circuit the committee to begin with? Representative Broad, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Representative Broad.
Madam Chair, and I wish I did have a crystal ball, but I don't. But you make a very good point, and I think I should work with you and Representative Marquardt and any other members of the committee who want to talk about that timing issue, because my goal is to not politicize this, and that when Representative Lincheski talked about the issues in conference committee last year, it was an issue of membership, but it also was an issue of timing. I think the suggestion was that the report should come out in October of the election year, and that's not my goal. So my goal is to depoliticize it as much as possible, so I'll work on that with you.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Broad, even though your bill calls for revenue-neutral changes, if the tax commission were created and came back with reports that our sales tax, our income taxes, our property taxes, our gas taxes, and whatever other taxes you can think of, are woefully inadequate to meet the needs of the aging population and so forth, would you be willing to vote tax increases?
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, that's exactly why we're going to bring it forward in the form of legislation, and then this body can do what it will. With pieces of it, with all of it, I think we'll have a great discussion coming from this information.
Representative Earhart smiling, Representative Rod, you can't see him. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author, Representative Broad, and to Representative Dabney's point, I think that in the discussion with Mr. Olin was more about how do you get around the tentacles, the red tape, the largesse of government to just do your job. So I don't know that it was maybe a fair comparison, but Representative Broad, to Representative Dabney's point, maybe you want to include in the bill something that we've talked about a number of times in here. What is Iowa, what is South Dakota, what is Wisconsin doing with their tax policy to seal our job providers away? Because I think if you were to bring that point up or put that point in the commission, it would show up as a pretty high research survey data piece for those job providers in our state that have left. So if you're looking at getting at that tax angle, I think that would be a very high priority for business owners, especially those that have left the state.
Thank you, Representative Sellers. Members, are there other questions? Because we do want to hear from Dr. Wilson before we need to adjourn. If there are not, thank you for your time, Representative Broad, Mr. Reed, Ms. Diori. And members, I encourage everyone who's raised issues on different pieces to work with Representative Broad on changes to this tax commission study, and we'll see what can come out of this. So, Representative Broad, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
And I will lay House File 251 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. If Dr. Wilson could join us at the table. Members, you know that many people during the department bill raised issues about behavioral effects in how the Department of Revenue does revenue estimates. Similarly, there was discussion with Representative Mullery, Representative Solberg, and others on the treatment of penalty changes on our revenue estimates. So in your packets, we have two memos from Dr. Wilson addressing these issues for the committee. And so we want to have, first of all, Dr. Wilson report, talk to us a little bit about his attempt to answer our questions, and then we want to have questions for Dr. Wilson from committee members. So with that, Dr. Wilson, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Paul Wilson from the Tax Research Division at the Department of Revenue. I want to start by just simply saying I fully understand the frustration that some members of the committee have with the revenue estimation process and some of the rules that we seem to follow in preparing them. I was, after all, a rabble-rousing fiscal staff member for this committee for a few years. I used to send those questions over to revenue. Now I get to get no feedback.
And Dr. Wilson, if I can just hang on 1 second, I want to make sure all members are finding the two documents we're looking at now. They're dated February 9th and 13th. They say Minnesota Revenue on the top, and they're from Dr. Wilson, who is answering questions we all have raised in the last couple weeks in this committee. Sorry to interrupt. Proceed, Dr. Wilson.
Madam Chair, if I let me begin with the treatment of behavioral effects and then move on to the penalties. With behavioral effects, it's a little unclear exactly what questions being answered, but I tried to address what I think were the concerns of the committee members. When we do revenue estimates, we do include some behavioral effects. We do assume, for example, that when you raise the cigarette tax, the smokers will smoke less, and we do take that into account in our revenue estimate. And there are other examples like that where we do take behavioral effects into account in running the numbers. On the other hand, there are some cases where we do not, and I think that's probably maybe the best thing to focus on, is where don't we and why don't we take those into account. There's a general rule of thumb given in the middle of the first page of the memo. The general rule of thumb is that we take behavioral responses to tax changes into account if they meet both of the following conditions: that it's a direct result of a change in Minnesota tax law, and that there is a generally accepted methodology, a reasonably objective way to estimate the magnitude of the behavioral response based on either our own experience in the state of Minnesota, the experience by the states, or something, review of the professional literature. So that's the rule of thumb, and the rest of the memo really tries to be organized around that. The first question then is, what is a direct effect? What do you mean by direct effect rather than secondary effects? We do not in the department do what is referred to in the technical literature, and sometimes legislators use this term more broadly, but from a professional sense, the term dynamic revenue estimate. We do not do dynamic revenue estimating at the Department of Revenue in these bills. Now, anytime you have, for example, a tax cut, it can be argued that the tax cut will, in fact, increase income after tax. People will consume more. They will pay more sales tax. That will generate more business. There'll be more jobs. There'll be more income generated. There'll be investment. This will generate more tax revenue. And so those secondary effects, if you've taken an ineffective course in economics, you know the multiplier effect. Whenever one minus the marginal propensity to consume, if you remember that. But that multiplier effect is sort of the secondary effects that are talked about. And there are states that do try to take these into account. We don't do so, and we don't do so partly because we don't have the resources to do it. There are some models that can be used to estimate the secondary effects, and DEED does in fact do these kind of studies once in a while. DEED will take a $20 million tax cut and will run it through the REMI model, Regional Economic Models Incorporated, I think is what REMU stands for, but they have this model, and it's a model that where you change something in the model, and it runs out through many years what the impact of that would be on jobs, on basically jobs and income. Okay, REMU model is not a tax model. It doesn't have the tax levers. It's very difficult to use that kind of a model to look at tax changes, other than just a general thing that if you give people $20 million, what's going to happen? The $20 million could be dropped out of an airplane, or it could be a tax cut. It's going to be spent, and it's going to regenerate, but it doesn't help us differentiate among tax policies. So the REMU model is not a very useful model for doing tax, for sort of analyzing tax differences. So we don't really have the tools to very carefully do this. We could, you know, so you could sort of do something with it. We don't have the tools to do it right. It would show different effects for different kind of tax cuts, which is really what you're looking for, or different kind of tax increases. So the question would be, why is it worth getting the resources to do this? And there are some states that have done that. Massachusetts and California are the best known, and there are some other states that have generated what are called dynamic revenue estimating models. And those models attempt to very carefully look at the impact of changing tax laws, what the ramifications are. And it's not just tax laws, you could look at other things. These are very complicated models. Now, as an economist, I think that a computable general equilibrium model is a thing of beauty. And I think working on one of those would be really neat. Okay, it's cool.
Whereas this is why Dr. Wilson has this job.
But if you look on the top of the third page, the experience in California, I mean, I think you really want to say is these would be expensive models, the question is it worth doing it? Obviously, let's say you could decide that something like this is something that you want done. The experience in California is interesting. First of all, feedback effects of these sorts were found. They were not negligible, but they were relatively small compared to what a lot of the proponents of the proposals suggested. Secondly, they were never incorporated. Those numbers were never incorporated in the budget process. They used the static numbers for the budget, even though they had these dynamic revenue estimates provided as information. Third, there was not a lot of debate over methodology. The parameters of the model is a very technical model with a lot of economic jargon in it. A lot of debates over methodology and over the parameters of the model rather than over policy. So to some extent, you can get sidetracked. And finally, this was enacted as a requirement in California in 1994. It was allowed to expire in 2000 and has not been renewed. So dynamic revenue estimating went through its... They did it. They did it for a few years. They decided it was not necessarily a great idea, or at least some did. So I think that history is important. From our perspective, if you look at, and again I'll use the tax cut as an example, if you look at a tax cut and you say, well, won't this have secondary effects, et cetera, of that sort? And the answer is probably yes, and it's also probably yes for other tax cuts. And so what you really are interested in is the differentiation between different types of policy, and that's what is so hard to model without this kind of model. Okay, so the first thing is we don't do dynamic revenue estimating. The second thing, which is maybe a little closer to home for some of you on the committee, we don't take into account the economic development impacts of particular projects. You know that when there's a power plant out there and someone wants a tax break for this new power plant, and we come through and we say, oh, that's going to have a tax. If you get a sales tax break for that, we're going to say it's going to lose the department, I mean, lose the state money. And you say, but, you know, two things. First of all, that power plant won't be built unless you give the sales tax break. And second, you'll say, well, that particular power plant isn't in the forecast. So therefore, there should be no cost because it isn't in the forecast, so we can't lose money that isn't in the forecast. And but for this tax break, it wouldn't be there, so we can't lose money if it wouldn't be there otherwise. The Department of Revenue has a little problem with this because we are not in the business of figuring out whether the but-for test is met. We don't have the ability to do that. You don't want us to make the judgment about which business is, in fact, going to be built only because of a tax break and which one would be built anyway. You don't want us trying to do that. We don't have the ability to do that. And our rule is basically the economic forecast includes economic growth in it. And these projects are part of the general economic growth that is in the forecast. And we're not going to make the judgment about whether this would be built otherwise. Anyway, that's sort of where we sit on this. I know it's frustrating, and I know you hear the arguments that there should be no cost to this, but we assume consistently that projects will be built anyway. Jobs E was a tax break for businesses that arguably, some would argue, would not be there otherwise. But when the revenue estimate was done for those, we assumed those businesses would be there anyway, and as a result, there was a sales tax cost for those items. So I think for consistency purposes and just the judgment issues, my argument would be in the interest of the committee in terms of decision-making, you're better off with us doing that than trying to make these kind of judgments. And finally, the second part of the rule of thumb talks about certainty. And in the cigarette case, there's a lot of evidence. We have our own experience. We've done very well, actually, judging correctly on what the impact of that will be on smoking when you raise the tax. But in a lot of areas, there's a lot of speculation. And unless we can really be quite certain of the magnitude, easy to speculate what will be the effects. Unless we're certain of the magnitude, we don't tend to take those into account. Now, sometimes we may mention them. We may talk about there's a possibility of this, but we don't put the numbers in because it's so speculative. Now, I know you could say, well, if you just did a little more work, you could figure out speculative only in the sense that you haven't worked hard enough to figure them out. And there is some truth to that. With unlimited resources, we could probably do a better job of nailing down some of these. And, of course, that's not the world we live in. Anyway, the goal in this is to provide the best information in a consistent way for the budget process, and that is the attitude we take toward this. And I hope that you don't think it's all just arbitrary on our part of sort of rules we follow with no reason.
And Dr. Wilson, if I can have you just go right to the next, the penalty changes quickly too, because we do have Representative Solberg and Coles have a question. So if you can just cover your other memo, and we'll take questions on either one.
Okay, the penalties memo is in some ways much simpler. We generally do not include revenue estimate in revenue from penalties. And the best way to explain why we don't is to explain one where we did. Okay, so the memo in the second paragraph talks about an occasion where we did put a revenue estimate on a change in penalties. It was a 2001 department bill which reformed the penalty system in the Department of Revenue. It resulted in fairly large reductions in penalties for late filers in the income tax and corporate tax. Late filing penalties went down. We went from a step system where they went up through time. We went to more of a flat system and a substantial reduction in penalties. So it was a substantial change, significant amount of money. Those penalties raised about $10 million a year, even after abatements. We had a good history of what they raised. The proposal only changed the penalty rates. It didn't change when a penalty was being put into effect. It just changed the rates. And the goal was not to raise money or to lose money. The goal was to basically simplify the system, and the goal was also to get rid of some anger problems on taxpayers who found that by the time the department contacted them, they already had these huge assessed penalties that they didn't know about until they were contacted. So the goal was not to raise or reduce money either. And when we did that revenue estimate, we assumed no change in behavior. We assumed that people still would behave exactly the same, and we just looked at the history and we said, well, in that case, it's going to be this much of a drop, and we came up with an estimate. Most changes where you have penalty, most time when you propose penalty changes, there are things like the $50 penalty, new penalty in the department bill for a tax preparer who does not include an ID number. Now, they're clear we're trying to change behavior. We're trying to make sure that nobody does that. The goal is to have no revenue come in because we want to have a threat out there that will make it so that no one will, in fact, do that. And in all likelihood, that would come pretty close to that. That would be a high enough penalty to actually get close to that. Those kind of penalties aren't going to raise money. Their goal is not money. Their goal is behavioral change. And as a result, the impact on revenue is likely to be very small, if any, and very hard to estimate with no history. So there are times when we do this. There's no hard and fast rules that we never do penalties, just like there's a hard and fast rule that we never do interest. It's just a question of some circumstances that make sense and some that doesn't make as much sense if we decide to do the estimate.
Thank you. Representative Solberg.
Well, Madam Chair, Dr. Wilson, thank you for the memos. I appreciate those very much. I guess my thought a little bit was for changing behavior in one, if you have a history on, and you have done that in the revenue estimate on one particular category, then you change the behavior and you go from 0 to 50, that there obviously is some change in the revenue. But I can appreciate that very much as the reason for it as well. I was surprised on it because, if we take that to its conclusion, then we have the same kind of result of changing behavior in the traffic fines and so forth. So when we raise the fines, that we would expect no income because we've changed their behavior. So I would hope that the department at least tracks how much they take in. That would be helpful.
Thank you, Representative Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think more of a comment. I have been frustrated at times by the department's decision not to take account of behavioral effects and its revenue estimates, but I think that Dr. Wilson, your memo is helpful in explaining why the department does that. On the second page of the memo, though, just a comment, Madam Chair. There's a sentence here that reads, one of the consequences of such analysis, he's talking about the computable general equilibrium models, which he's so excited about, and I don't know what the hell they are. One of the consequences of such analysis is that time is spent debating methodology and the model's parameters as opposed to policy, and I think that's a really important point. I've heard Representative Rukavina, for example, spend a whole lot of time in this committee and elsewhere talking about the use of car crash data in determining whether or not a community ought to receive more or less LGA, and that really is an issue of methodology as opposed to policy, and I'm not sure that those discussions have been terribly productive. It's really an attack at the methodology, not so much around the policy, and so I just assume, although I'd love to have a retort when Representative Rukavina raises that issue, and I'm sure that I could probably come up with something if I could figure out what a computable general equilibrium model is. I think Dr. Wilson's point there is well taken, at least by me, and I appreciate the effort, Dr. Wilson, in putting these together and providing the explanation to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Cole. Thank you, Dr. Wilson, for joining us. We appreciate it. And with that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.